Warning, this episode contains references to domestic abuse, sexual abuse, child abuse, suicide, and mental illness. Hey everybody, before we begin today's episode, I've got a few things to mention. First, this episode was recorded back in February of 2020, hence why there's no references about COVID-19, the Black Lives Matter protests, and the stories about victims of sexual harassment from the video game and other industries. We'll have a lot more to say about these issues in our update episodes, which should be coming very, very soon. Second, this episode was originally going to be a Patreon exclusive before the lockdown started, and plans to launch Patreon are postponed at the moment. That's why at the end, I thank people for donating when, obviously, you did not have to pay anything to listen to this episode. However, if things do improve next year, this episode may give you an idea how Patreon exclusive content may be formatted in the future. Third, at the time of recording this, now I have played 93 hours of Persona 5, and boy, have there been some twists and turns in this story! We may do a part 2 down the road, but not anytime soon. It took long enough for this episode to release, for God's sake. And that's it for me. Now, on to the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Ranchat Bits, the Patreon-exclusive bonus show. I'm your host, Arlo Rodriguez. Today, we are talking about Persona 5, one of my favorite games of all time. But we'll have to put some disclaimers at the top already. Number one, I have not finished this game yet. I am 63 hours in. I think I've seen most of the Phantom Thieves, but I have not still need to finish the game. So that's a big disclaimer up top. Number two, one of the reasons why we didn't do this as a regular Random Chatters episode is because this game is too fucking long. Very, very long, and I didn't think I could do it justice, but I didn't want that to prevent me from talking about a game that really means so much to me. So I decided to do it as a Ranchat Bit instead. It's like, this is perfect with the looser tone that we're going for. I think this would be a perfect venue to finally talk about what one of my favorite games of all time. I would say top five favorite games. I think there was that thing going on Twitter about, like, what's the four games that define you. I think this is one of them. Absolutely. And it's actually kind of funny, though. The timing of this episode, at least me recording this episode finally, I didn't actually mean to time it that it would be timed with not only the release of Persona 5 Royale, which is the expansion of I think it adds an extra semester and a new character to the game. And I think it also adds more story bits. But also the release of Persona 5 Scramble in Japan, which is a... Oh boy. Well, this is the Ranchat Bits. This is what we're going into. Oh, right. Third disclaimer. Spoilers. Everywhere. I'm spoiling the fuck out of this game. I haven't seen the entire game yet, but I am spoiling it all the way to heaven. I can't come up with a good metaphor right now. And the reason I'm doing this is because this is the only way I can talk about this game, is to just spoil the fuck out of it. So, warning, if you do want to play this game and if you want to wait, I think the Royale is out now. I will have to double check that and I'll add that to my notes. But if you can play this game, if you have a PlayStation 4, you can play Royale right now. It's still not out on Switch, but Scramble is on Switch, and what's up with that? Anyway, I didn't mean for the release of this episode to be timed with the release, or the recording of this episode to be timed with the release of Royale and Scramble. It just worked out that way, and I actually wanted to jokingly call this Persona 5 Part 1, because we'll see. Assuming we're Scramble, if it gets localized in the West, if it'll be coming out this summer or this fall even, because the localization, of course, is a huge, massive effort and it takes a lot of time for all that to happen. So we'll see if I'll be talking about Scramble in the near future, but I might likely will be. I did get to try out the demo and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I do think that it does have that Musou feeling of the Dynasty Warriors games, like the games where you're just like slashing the fuck out of like hundreds of enemies at once. And I did feel that the Joker's control was kind of stiff to me, but there was a lot of other elements about that. But we're not talking about Scramble. We're just talking about OG Persona 5. And so now that I've already given all those disclaimers, let's go ahead and get started talking about this. And again, this is going to be a much looser discussion of Persona 5 than normal. And a part of my discussion won't be just about Because, I mean, I could spend all day talking about how amazing the game is, but that... Another reason why I wanted to wait a little bit to talk about this is because, one, I wanted to make sure I had enough knowledge about the game going into it in terms of gameplay, in terms of the story. But also, this game was talked about when it came out in, I think, in 20s. It came out in Japan in 2016, but it was released in the West in 2017. So people have had a long time to talk about it. Probably even closer to release, that's when everyone talked about it. So it made sense for me to let it gestate a little bit in my brain tummy. So stupid vocabulary. let it ruminate a little bit, and then I can finally talk about it. But let's actually talk about what the game is all about. So Persona 5 is a Japanese RPG. It takes place in modern day Japan. The main character is Joker, or at least his code name is Joker, but we don't actually know what the protagonist's official name is. Joker is actually a code name for all of the Phantom Thieves. The Phantom Thieves are an assortment of teenagers who get to go into the metaverse, and they get to go into palaces, and they get to steal the treasure, or in this case, it's the heart of, and the person's palace is the person that they're infiltrating, like a bat. Usually, it depends on the type of person. Like if it's a person of a particularly despicable nature, they can go and infiltrate their palace, steal their treasure, and then change their hearts, or steal their heart, basically. And that's what the Phantom Thieves are all about. And Joker, so we don't know what the main character name of the protagonist is, but you can name the protagonist whatever you want. And because I'm the most imaginative person in the world, of course I named my protagonist Sonic Mania, because what else would you call him? I really couldn't come up with a name for Joker, I'm sorry. But yeah, his name in my playthrough is Sonic Mania. And it's even funnier now. I'm also playing through Dragon Quest XI. S:: Echoes of an Elusive Age, Definitive Edition. And I named my protagonist Thatherton. Thatherton. I can't do the voice. So I always pick the best names for my Japanese protagonists. So when you actually get to infiltrate the palaces, you get to fight these different personas that are in the palaces, and then that's when the turn-based combat actually applies, and then you have a team of four, and then the team of four have different abilities. They're different personas. And so the persona is basically a manifestation of the protagonist or the character's personality. More accurately, it's their partner, and depending on the character, the persona has different abilities. So let's say... I'm going to drop a bunch of names here, so apologies. So there's Anne, her persona, she can use fire abilities. And there's Ryuji, who can use electric abilities. Yusuke uses ice. Makoto uses radiation, or nuclear. And then there's the last character who I've encountered, but I don't actually know what her abilities are yet. Haru, who is... I don't know yet. I'll put a bookmark there, and then I haven't finished this game yet, but yeah, basically. But Joker is the only character who can actually collect multiple personas. The risk reward type of gameplay is that do you want to have a bunch of those personas, and do you just want Joker to exclusively be the one to do all the combat, or at least most of the combat to lead into the combos, or do you want Joker to just kind of be maybe a character that can use like different magical abilities? Because one of the things you have to know about when you're infiltrating a palace is that you have a certain amount of SP, special points. I don't know if they're called special points in this game. I think that's Pokemon. But you have SP, and that lets you use special abilities, or at least it lets you use the abilities of the persona. But if you run out of that ability, you can either use items to regain your abilities in the palaces, or you have to leave the metaverse to refill all of your health and your SP. So that's something you have to keep in mind. Another really good thing about infiltrating palaces is that, you're the Phantom Thieves. So the gameplay is integrated into investigation, into like feeling like you're a thief who's trying to break into these different palaces, because you're technically not supposed to be there. You're messing shit up. I'll definitely have a content warning at the top of this episode, because we're going to talk about some horrific subject matter in a little bit, but we'll talk about the fun stuff first. We'll talk about the fun stuff of Persona 5. But when you're infiltrating these palaces, you get to sneak into the shadows into the corners, and you could get to kind of plot exactly how you're going to approach an enemy that you see within your vision. And then one of the things I don't like about the game is that the camera, it seems kind of limited. I kind of wish that you could rotate the camera like 360 degrees, and I don't know if that's an effect of, well, if you were actually standing behind this corner trying to look across the table, you wouldn't be able to see everything. But, like, it's a fucking video game, and I'm already, like, a fucking phantom thief who can, like, jump double the amount of height that I could normally. Come on, just let me see the whole thing. But, yeah, sometimes you have to really plan out your maneuvers, plan out your movement. If you hold down, I think, the right trigger, is it R2? I think it's R2 on the PlayStation. One of the trigger buttons, you can actually run. But the thing is that if you run, you might find yourself in the line of sight of a persona, and then they'll find you. And then your security level goes up. And if your security level goes up, that means more enemies will be searching for you in the palaces. So you're trying to keep your security level at a 0% so that no one suspects that you're there. On the other hand, you also have the third eye. I'm dropping a lot of stuff here. I told you, I'm spoiling the shit out of this game. You have the third eye, and it's an ability that lets you see if there's items hidden in bookshelves or in vases, and if it's glowing yellow, there's usually some kind of a part or an ability, or some part or an item that you can steal. But it'll also tell you how strong a persona is that you're about to encounter, that you're about to face. And so if it's red, you better be fucking ready. You better make sure that you have your team is strong, that you have your armor up and everything, like you have the right equipment, and that you're equipped, because that's gonna be a fight. And one thing I particularly love about the turn-based combat is that the first time you're facing the enemy, you have no idea what they're weak against, and they have different weaknesses. But if you do get them weak, you can then do an all-out attack. You can do three other options. You can do an all-out attack. You can negotiate with them for the persona to join you, and then you can actually, like, it can be part of your collection of persona, or you can convince them to give you items or money. So just think, what do I want? Do I want experience with the all-out attack, or do I want a new teammate? Or in some cases, like for some mission, maybe you need to combine this persona with a different persona for a specific objective. So what do you want to do? The options are all yours. Most of the time I do the all-out attack because it's fucking awesome. It's just a barrage of attacks against the enemy, and it's fucking rad. One thing I should have mentioned at the very top, this visual style is unlike, it's so distinct and bold. The colors are very bold. The opening will tell you everything you need to know about the visual style, and it's very consistent. Even though the game world and the models of the characters themselves are in 3D, the titles, the main screen, menu options are all in this very distinct artistic style that with these really dark, bold colors, like this bold black outline and very sharp edges, like even the dialogue and everything. Like, someone could look at it and it's like, this is kind of edgy. It's like kind of edgy for the sake of being edgy, but like, oh God, I think this is fucking awesome. It's striking, especially like when Joker's using an ability, and it's an ability with a weakness that he just uncovered. His eyes just appear in the middle, and it's just like, does this like shh sound, and it's so fucking satisfying. It's especially satisfying when the first time you're infiltrating a palace and you find the weakness of an enemy, because you're at first you're just like, oh fuck, oh God, what do I use? Okay, do I use a physical move? Do I use my gun, or do I use my persona? And is this ability going to work against this enemy? And when it does, it's like, oh my God, okay, we'll be fine. Because then if you're able to knock out, if there's multiple enemies rather than just the one, if you knock them all out, then you can do the all-out attack and the stuff I already talked about earlier. But also the music, which you're hearing now in the background. Oh, God. Let me just sample very, very briefly. I'll make sure in post I don't use this song in the background. So let's quickly listen to just a little bit. Okay, let's create a scenario. So right now, oh, I'm Joker. Okay, I'm walking around. Ooh, I see an enemy. I'm going to target the enemy. We can hit a button, and because they don't see us, we can actually target them without them seeing us, and we can initiate the battle, and we can start attacking first. All right, we got it. Battle starting. Last surprise. You got those initial beats. You got the awesome vocals. I feel alive playing. Like, one of the things about RPGs and one of the reasons why people don't like playing them so much is because how much you kind of have to wait, or there's a lot of repetition to it. And you could even argue that with all of its flair, Persona 5 can be repetitive. But it never, to me, it never feels that way. And I don't know why. It's either just I'm a sucker for RPGs, but every time I hear Last Surprise, god damn it, I am so fucking hyped. Let's beat up another enemy, and we're just gonna get more experience. Yeah, we're gonna get more money. Yeah. Oh, it feels. Oh, it's so fucking amazing. It's such a god amazing feeling. So that's what it's like to infiltrate palaces. And I am already like just imagine like in post getting to listen to that song. Okay. The music of Alls in this game is fantastic. It's the type of music that like sticks with me even after like long after you stop playing. Like the music. When you're just navigating in your initial town, like the town that's right outside of the cafe where you're currently living with Sojiro Sakura. He's not your godfather, but he's the person who's in charge of taking care of you. Without explaining too much of the story, I know I said spoilers, but story stuff, this stuff, I don't want to get boggled down the story stuff because I could get lost in it. But basically, Sojiro is taking care of you. He's your caretaker. So every time you're in that little town, there's this really nice soft piece that's playing. I'll try to play it underneath my dialogue, my words right now. And it's just so soft. And then it's kind of funny. Like, I think in the beginning of the game, it just starts and it's just the instrumental version. But then once you actually become a Phantom Thief, I don't know what triggers it exactly or if there's a specific moment in the story. But then once that happens, then the track becomes a vocal track. So you still recognize it with the instrumentals, but then it's actually the vocal tracks. And I think all of the vocals are by the same performer, I think, is Lin. All of the details about the kind of stuff will be in the description. So not only can you infiltrate palaces, and that's going to be a big part of the story, and another thing you kind of have to think about while you're playing the game and why it is such a fucking long game, in terms of story, it takes place over the course of a year, and that's literally what it is. It's a day. Every single activity moment is a day in the life of Joker. And I think this I do need to explain. So the game is actually you playing the events of the past as you're telling the story to a detective who, in the beginning of the game, the Phantom Thieves are trying to infiltrate a casino and then they're captured by the police. And then Joker is beat up pretty badly and he's being interrogated by Sae Nijima, who has been in charge of investigating the Phantom Thieves. So while Joker's actually talking about the events that transpired, the ones that Sae knows about already, but like for the player, you're just like learning everything for the first time. And for the beginning of the game, it like already has you as a Phantom Thief, and then you kind of like drop down, like literally your status goes back down to, oh, I'm just a nobody who just lives here, who no one trusts me because I was arrested. The reason I was taken by Sojiro is because I helped a woman who was getting abused by her boyfriend or by some adult. I mean, the character got in a fight with him. And then the police just saw Joker beating up somebody and they just immediately thought, oh, hey, that's a delinquent, that's a bad delinquent, we have to arrest him. So that's why Sojiro's taking care of Joker. A big part of the game is, one, that you're taking every single day to do these actions. And then during the moments when you actually get to infiltrate the palaces, once you eventually find out who the targets are and then the Phantom Thieves trying to investigate the palaces or investigate the real world to figure out how to trigger the palace, find the code word so they can actually go into the palaces and do all that, you have a limited amount of time. Usually there's a story reason why there's going to be a limited amount of time you can infiltrate the palace, because then once that time's up, then I don't know if it's a game over, but something happens. I haven't experienced it yet because obviously that means the game's over. So I haven't got to the point where I failed in completing a palace yet. But it is something that it's kind of terrifying, because then the letters on the top right kind of indicate how many, or it might be the top, I think it is the top right, indicate how much time you have left to complete a palace or complete, yeah, or just complete, like, I think it was because you have to take this person's heart before this day or this happens. And I think right now in the plot line I'm playing right now, the character Haru is going to get married forcibly, and we have just several days to change her father's heart so that the wedding can be called off. So there's always some kind of very high stakes, a reason for why you have to try to complete the palace as fast as possible. But the thing is that you can still, like, you can infiltrate a palace in one day, and the next day it's like, oh shoot, we need more armor, or we got a lot of yen from a lot of the battles. We can use our armor to get more, like, stronger equipment. Or maybe there's like guts. There's so many mechanics. I'm only gonna explain the most important mechanics. Even after the point when you have completed a palace or in the middle of doing a palace, a big part of the game is relationships. Not just the relationships between the Phantom Thieves, but relationships between your caretaker a fortune teller that you meet in one of the cities, a politician who just meet on the subway station, or your teacher who, oh boy. One thing, unfortunately, I will have to have a bit of a disclaimer is that this game has some very interesting idea. Interesting is not the right way of putting it, but very skewed, controversial perspectives on society and about underage people in general. And one of the people that you can befriend, who can be one of your allies, is your teacher. But the way you recruit her is that there's a storyline where you find out there's a maid service, and maids are known for, you know, providing cleaning, but also other things. So you find out that your teacher, unfortunately, because she isn't making enough money as a teacher in high school, is also a maid. And there's an extremely awkward conversation that happens when she finds out, oh my god, you're one of my students, what the fuck is going on here? And that's one of the things that makes it difficult to recommend this game, because it definitely crosses boundaries in that kind of way. And ultimately, you actually do learn a lot more about the teacher. And one thing I do really admire about the game is how it, you know, there's the typical, or you're like, there's an idea you have about someone, or there's like, oh, this person is just. Sojiro was one of my most hated characters. He didn't give Joker a moment of his time at all. Immediately labeled him as a delinquent. He's like, don't get into trouble. But then when you learn more about him, about his background, and we're going to go into in-depth about his daughter in a little bit. When you learn about her and about what he has to have gone through, I really felt a lot of emotion for him. And that's one of the great things about the game, is that because of so much time, how much time you're committing, be prepared to not play any other games. Unless, I mean, you can't just play one game. I'm playing five RPGs at the same time. Huge mistake, but I'm doing it. And I just bought Nier Automata. That's definitely going to be a Ranch at Bits in the future. I'm promising that. Because of how much time you're committing to learning more about every single one of these characters. Because you can spend a day with them. And then when you spend a day with them, that actually improves the rank that you have. And then based on the rank, it'll give you abilities that you can do in battle. So in one case, you can have an ability where if you do an attack that weakens someone, you can do a baton pass to another character, and then they can continue the assault, the attack, but they also, their attack gets raised. And it's just like, there's a lot of really great incentives to befriending every single person that you may know. And again, the game doesn't really tell you this. You also can get a job if you want to get a job at a flower shop or the beef bowl shop to get a little more money, because you might need it, or to build up your other stats. There's just so much you can do in this game, and it's honestly exhausting by how many options you have. And that's probably why every time I play this game, and I feel like I take long breaks from it. Also, it doesn't help that it's on the PS3, and you know, if it was on Switch, I could just pull out the game, continue it, save, and then go back, and I'm set. But I can't do that. But anyway, I usually give myself like at least 5 hours to play Persona 5, because that's how much time you need. And another thing I really should mention, and the important thing I should mention, is the story. The story is an integral part about the game. You could just ignore the story. If you've already played the game, it gives you the option to fast forward everything, which I really admire about that. Tokyo Mirage Sessions has a similar option, and more RPGs need to do this. Like, have a fast forward button. If you're playing the game again, it would make sense that you wouldn't really want to care too much about the story, because you just want to get to the point. You just want to get to this thing. But then I get so engrossed in the story that I think that on my last playthrough, I only played the total of 10 minutes in the palace, and the rest of it was just story, a lot of story. And the story so far is getting very, very interesting. But again, I don't want to talk about the story in super, super detail, because this podcast will be 3 hours long if I get to that point, and then I'll be rambling a lot, because I didn't prepare for that. I prepared in advance, but I didn't prepare that far. Another thing I should also mention is that Joker, you can have Joker be the protagonist you want him to be. Do you want him to be an asshole? You can make him do a smarky comment, like when the game gives you the option to give smarky comments. They usually give you 3 comments in particular, and you can determine what kind of Joker you want to play as. I can't be too much of an asshole in video games. I always try to be like a reliable Joker, not like super. I don't even know how to explain this, but basically I try not to be too much of an asshole. That's the best way I could put it. All right, there's one more thing I need to talk about, and well, there's two more things I need to talk about. I think it's the one element of this game that is universally disliked by the community. And at first I thought, oh, but I kind of like this. And then when you're doing this for an hour, it's like, oh my God, please let's stop. Mementos. Mementos is a part of the metaverse. It's basically a dungeon. A dungeon with different levels to it. And then when you start getting requests from people, oh God, this is playing something. So there's a website of Phantom Thieves. And then people will send requests to that website. And then you can accept those requests. And then you can go into Mementos to complete those requests. Every single Mementos trip is just, oh, there's a person who's acting badly, or there's a heart we need to steal. We need to go down into several floors to find this person and steal their heart. And that's all you do in Mementos. The other thing is that you do get to encounter like older enemies, and maybe look, if there's a persona you need for the purposes of some kind of objective or assignment, you can get that persona, but that's all you're doing in Mementos, and it does get really repetitive. It's kind of cool because you can see one of the characters, Morgana, who's one of your party members, who's the one that kind of gets you introduced into the whole metaverse. They can transform into a bus where all of your characters, well, all the Phantom Thieves, game, like, they get piled into the bus, and then you can use the bus and you can travel in, and that's kind of cute. But again, this gets old fast because it's exactly the same every single time. The encounters you see and the personas you might see, they might not be the same, and they might still be pretty challenging too, but the environments, it's exactly the same. And at first I thought, I don't mind this, and I get to get a lot of money, and then I just like, oh my God, just let's stop. I don't want to do more of these. It definitely is possible to 100% this game, but don't fucking do it. Not if you have to spend so much time in Mementos. You've got better things to do in the game. You got the story or other shit. That's like, you've got the money, go to a burger place and see if you can complete that burger objective. It's more random. Like, you might do it. You likely won't do it in the beginning because you need guts, but if you have enough guts, maybe you can eat that burger. Anyway, my point is there's a lot to do in this game, and that's probably why it's taking so long for me to beat it. Okay, so before I delve into two particular characters I really want to talk about, I do should have mentioned up front that this game is incredibly dark. A lot of the beats in the story, the ones that I'll even be talking about, I'm just going to talk about some of the very dark themes that the game explores. A lot of the difficult conversations that the Phantom Thieves have to have, and some of the things that they have to encounter, and they're basically superheroes, but I guess with any kind of medium relating to superheroes, like what exactly are the risks we have to take with this new responsibility that we've been given. And so some of the themes that are in this game is suicide, sexual coercion. So there's a plot line with a gym teacher who has been having sex with his students and abusing his abusing the volleyball team physically abusing them. And oh Jesus Christ! And there's some horrific stuff that happens, like when you actually infiltrate the palace and you see the shadow that makes up the person. The person exists in the palace. And it's a manifestation of the person, but as their most horrible self. It's Kamoshida, I think, is the name of the gym teacher. He is in a crown, but in his underwear. And one of the students is like his servant, and it's disgusting. Which makes you wonder, like, to change his heart sooner. But it's one of the things that's, Jesus, this is fucked up. So yeah, child abuse, murder happens a lot in this game. It's because there's like a bigger conspiracy happening with the government, but again, that's stuff I can't fully explain yet. Self-harm, and that's related to the same plot line with the gym teacher, one of the students who he had a relationship with, wanted to kill herself. Once the story got out, or once the rumors started to roll around in the school, tried to kill herself. Like, she actually tried to jump from the building of the school, and that's unfortunately one of the very heavy subject matter that you'll be experiencing in the game. So that's something to be aware of. There's a lot of discussion about the place in terms of society, in terms of how, where everyone belongs to. Like, there's a lot of like talks of isolation in the game, like people feeling distant, people wanting to like they don't know where they belong, and that's not as dark as any of the other things, but it was incredibly relatable for me. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really admire this game. And unfortunately, there is one thing where I'll have to talk about before we start talking about the two characters. It's been in the conversation recently because it was actually addressed by, I think, someone in Atlas. It wasn't their localization team, but someone in Atlas, I think Atlas West, who actually did say a controversial scene with Luigi. In one scene, I think they're in a city and they're going to try to investigate and figure out who's the next target. There's these two presumed homosexuals. You can kind of tell by their dialogue. And in the Western version of Persona 5, it is dubbed in English. So the voices are also stereotypical. And the looks of the characters are stereotypical. Stereotypes of homosexuals. It's a disturbing and creepy scene of the characters wanting to steal. I think they do steal Luigi, and they say, "Oh, you're a big boy," and it's just ugh. So there was talks about them removing the scene in Persona 5 Royale, which I'm happy they're going to be doing that. They're going to be addressing that. There's also been a lot of backlash that, "Oh, but it's only a 1 minute scene." But like, no, but it's a fucked up scene in general, and it's such a weird outlier in the rest of the game. The rest of the game seems to have a very consistent tone. And it knows when to be serious, and it knows when to be humorous, and you do get an impression of the characters. This was felt, I mean, one, it's incredible. It's these terrible stereotypes, but on the other hand, it just didn't make sense in the context of the story, and it's just fucked up in general. Just imagining these characters like stealing. These are all teenagers. All of the characters are teenagers, so it was just. I'm glad they're. Well, they haven't said they're removing the scene, but they're updating it. We'll have to see. We'll have to see what that actually looks like. And one other thing I do want to talk about, this is a bit of a nitpick on my end, I'll admit that, but Joker in the cutscenes sometimes doesn't reflect the Joker that you're playing as. And this is the unfortunate consequence of playing the game, which gives you so many options, because then you realize, oh wait, the Joker in the cutscenes is kind of a creep. There's a cutscene when they're all in the desert and they're going to one of the characters' palaces. I'll have a lot more to say about this in a little bit. But there's Luigi and Joker are staring at An's breasts because she's like sweating a lot in the bus. And it's like, this is Joker. I didn't know you. I thought you were better than this, Joker. It's not. I personally don't think it's very consistent with Joker's personality. I know, again, if you're playing Joker as an asshole, I feel like that would be something he would do. But even in the scene with his teacher, it seems like some of his response is just, I don't want anything to do with this. I agreed to this, but I didn't want to do this. I don't know. That just felt off to me in terms of his personality. I don't know. In that case, I'll admit that's a nitpick on my part. And I don't even want to say boys will be boys. That's disgusting. Either way, there's a lot of times you'll feel creeped out. Because I must reiterate, these are teenagers we're talking about. So when they're looking at, I know it's teenagers looking at teenagers' breasts, but then it's like, but you're an adult looking at this animated scene of teenagers looking at teenagers. It gets complicated, and you really, it's worth thinking about that, at least in terms of why it's acceptable in some places, and then why it feels stranger in others. Okay, so now we're actually are going to, it's not an ad break, it's more of a musical break, a brief one. But when we return, I'm going to talk about two of my favorite characters from the game and two of my favorite plot lines of the game. We're going to talk about Makoto Nijima, and we're going to talk about Futaba Sakura. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you. All right, welcome back, everybody. Let's talk about two of my favorite characters from Persona 5. And if I haven't already prepped you enough already with the content warning at the top of this episode and then with my description on some of the darker plot lines, it's going to get really heavy, so just be prepared. So let's first talk about Makoto Nijima. The Phantom Thieves, they're teenagers, one of them, Ruiji in particular. He actually, I think, is my least favorite character. Sometimes I'm on the fence of whether I like him or don't like him. And there's some stuff he says, it's like, oh, Jesus Christ. Was I this much of a creep when I was a teenager? They're not very good at being secretive individuals. And it's kind of funny. Ruiji is actually the one who is more, like, he wants to use the fact that he's a phantom thief. He wants to take advantage of that to try to get girls. So Makoto Nijima is the student body president of their in the high school. And so all the characters, they pretty much, I think some of the characters, they all go to the same high school. And there's an investigation by the principal because the phantom thieves do successfully change the heart of the gym teacher, and the teacher assumes responsibility for all of his crimes, all of the things that he did, all of the abuse, all of the sexual abuse. And he turns himself into the police, and he relieves his position at his job. And the principal, rather than, you know, being happy about this, is definitely responsible for at least covering up for the gym teacher. We can see some cutscenes where we see some conversation with him, and he seems to not want to even take responsibility for this at all. So he tries to pin it on Makoto to investigate what is going on, why did the teacher suddenly change his mind so drastically, and what are the Phantom Thieves, and who are the Phantom Thieves. And so Makoto, because she is the sister of Sae Nijima, who we talked about earlier, another detective, she kind of has a similar personality. Like, she's very inquisitive, very intelligent. She's able to piece out who are the Phantom Thieves. She's able to figure out who are Phantom Thieves. I mean, at one point, Ruiji just says out loud, "We're the Phantom Thieves," because he's a fucking idiot. So she tries to investigate who are the Phantom Thieves, but at the same time, she's having some issues at home because during a really intense scene between her and her sister, she starts to feel a lot of pressure from her sister because her sister Sae labels her as a useless member of the family, or just someone who just kind of takes up space, because I think they're currently living together. And in particular, I found this scene to be very powerful because I don't know what it's like to live in a shadow, and I'm not saying this to brag, and I know my brother's not listening, but he unfortunately did live in my shadow, because I was the student who would go to the magnet school, who would get the awards, who would get the recognition and respect and admiration of his teachers and everybody, who would be part of this nonprofit and everything. He never got any of that, and my parents would always try to pressure him to be the good son, or like he was always the outlier son. And Jesus Christ, seeing Makoto basically just try to get some advice from her sister, and her sister's kind of being frustrated with the Phantom Thieves case on her own and just being like shut out completely. It was just awful. And it made me realize that though Makoto is very intelligent, she's also very doubtful of her own abilities as a person, and how, unfortunately, because of her status as the student body president, the assumption is that she has, like, she's on an upper tier from the other students. I mean, she is in terms of her position, but she's powerless to do anything. Like, the only thing she's been able to do is just be a lackey for the principal and to basically do all of his bidding. And she starts to doubt her own abilities and her self-worth. And it's intense. And basically she has to blindly follow orders from authority figures, whether that be her sister or the principal. And it's really painful to see that play out. So in terms of the plot line, there is a well-known Japanese gangster who's harassing students from Shujin Academy. That's the high school. I actually wrote it down, but I didn't look at my notes until just now. I was engrossed in my own commentary. They're basically trying to harass students and trying to steal money from them. And they have an entire operation set up to take money from students. And so now Makoto has to figure out who is exactly is abusing the students, or who's responsible for abusing the students. And along the way, she actually figures out who the Phantom Thieves are, and she actually follows them back to their fucking hideout, because again, they're not very secretive about about their operation. And she confronts them, and then that's when An tells her, who are you really helping out here? Are you helping out the adults? Are you helping out yourself, like, to try to... I don't remember exactly what she says, but basically calls Makoto out on even trying to break up the Phantom Thieves, or try to tell the truth about them. And then Makoto decides to just follow along with them and collaborates with them to figure out who is harassing the students. And then eventually they find out it is a Japanese gangster, and they actually, through means I can't remember all the entire parts of the story, but they somehow find the way to the gangster's hideout, and the gangster takes a picture of the Phantom Thieves, but not as the Phantom Thieves, but like just the students, and says that if you don't do what I say, I'm going to... basically blackmails them and tells them that if they don't do what he says, they're going to show the photo to the principal and you may be expelled. So now, again, as I was discussing earlier, they have a certain amount of time to figure out how do we infiltrate the gangster's palace and how do we steal his heart. So they do that, and it's complicated. The palace is in the sky. I don't remember how they get up to the sky, but that's not important. What is important is that up to this point, there's a specific point in the story when a character finally releases their persona, or they figure out their own persona, and they become more powerful. It's usually during a moment of tension, but it's after, like, you've already infiltrated the palace. This is actually before the palace infiltration, and then you get discovered. The gangster actually finds the Phantom Thieves, and they're trapped. They can't get away. And this is when Makoto steps up and says, I'm done following orders. I'm done licking the boots of authority figures, and I'm done being a lackey. And I'm going to decide what I want for myself. And it's an incredibly powerful moment for Makoto. That's when her persona comes out, and it's an awesome persona. It's a fucking... she's on a fucking motorcycle, and she gets into this, biker outfit. And... God, that was such an amazing moment when that finally happened. And she finally joins. And I think it's after... basically, skip to the end. Everything works out. And the the gangster turns himself in once his heart is stolen. And Makoto officially joins the Phantom Thieves. And I cheered when I saw that moment. I felt so happy for her. And it's one of the high points of the story. But little did I know that not shortly after this, that's when we get introduced to another one of my favorite characters, and one of the darkest plot lines I think I've ever seen in a video game. And to be fair, I haven't played many serious video games with really long stories, so there's probably... Drakengard? I've heard those games are really fucked up. Is that by Yoko Taro, the director of Nier Automata? I don't remember. Someone said... or a producer. He's a producer, at least, on one of those games. I don't know. I heard those games are fucked up, but yeah, let's go ahead and let's start talking about Futaba Sakura, who I'm actually looking at a Nintendo of her as I speak right now. All right, there is a lot to say about Futaba. You might recognize her already. I think she's one of the most iconic characters from the game. She has her iconic glasses and her orange hairstyle and her set of headphones, her green jacket. And I felt kind of sorry, because, like, she was kind of hinted at in one part of the game, and I thought, oh my god, Futaba! Oh, I love Futaba! But I didn't realize, because, again, I had never played this game. I just know, oh, that's that character I like. I had no idea what I was getting into. Shall we begin? So, Futaba Sakura. Her online alias is Alibaba, and then... the Phantom Thieves. I mean, this story gets ridiculous. Holy shit. So there is basically an anonymous equivalent called Medjed. Medjed, who is, again, because it's, the Phantom Thieves don't really have any kind of security or VPN, so their stuff is available out there, and they're easily hackable. So Medjed finds out who the Phantom Thieves are, or they threaten to reveal who the Phantom Thieves are if they decide to no longer perform their type of justice, or to give up as Phantom Thieves. So there's another hacker named Alibaba who also knows who the Phantom Thieves are, and even hacks into their phones and knows who they are, knows everything about them, knows about what they do, how they do it, but also threatens to blackmail. Also, threatens to blackmail. The Vantuvies get blackmailed all the time in this story. Blackmail them to reveal their identity to everyone. But at the same time, Alibaba appears to be someone who might actually be able to counter Medjed, who is a hacker of such high talent and ability that they might actually be able to counter Medjed or even do a DDoS attack on Medjed and to take them down. But that's the risk that the Vantuvies have to think about. Is like, well, they also know who we are, so we should be careful like who we're interrogating here. So yeah, before the plotline starts, you get a brief hint at who Futaba is because you see this orange-haired girl who has her eyes locked on the computer screen, like typing away, really very frenetically. So that kind of kicks off the events of the story and what leads to them trying to investigate Alibaba to infiltrate her palace. Alibaba actually enlists the Phantom Thieves to steal her heart, or else she will reveal their identity to the police. So the Phantom Thieves have no choice but to go along with it. They find her keyword, and they're able to infiltrate the palace. And this is one of the most interesting palaces in the entire game, because it's Egypt. It's just Egypt. It's a little hard to explain it. So the palace itself is a pyramid. It's basically the tomb. And there's a shadow of Futaba, who's dressed in like kind of like Cleopatra in the kind of Egyptian regal style. So basically, the Phantom Thieves find out that there's a palace, and that the palace is a pyramid, and that there's no way inside the pyramid. So the Phantom Thieves have to go outside into basically like the city of Cairo, on the edge of the town, find a thief who somehow knows how to infiltrate the tomb. Now this actually connects into the real world, though, because the events of the real world, and that's something I didn't unfortunately explain. Unfortunately, I'll be explaining it now. So at the point when the Phantom Thieves actually do find the treasure, they have to give a calling card to their target, and then that will actually open up the treasure, or the treasure will actually be unveiled. Because first they'll be outside of the location of where the treasure is, but the treasure won't reveal itself until the targets receive their calling card. And in this case, this is a more dynamic example of real-world events affecting the palaces. There is absolutely no way to get in, even though they do find in every town, and they find the person, as I said before. Then there's a part of the pyramid where they actually get inside, but then they're blocked off and they can't go further. And it's a literal door. It's the door to Futaba's room that is closed, and the Phantom Thieves have to find a way for her to open the door so that they'll be able to actually infiltrate the rest of the pyramid. And so Futaba, especially at this point in the story, is not talkative at all, and so she only sends messages to the Phantom Thieves as Alibaba, as her online persona, and only through messages. And they're basically trying everything they can to try to convince her to open up and to open up, not just literally, but metaphorically, to allow them to help her out, because they established very early on that they only have good intentions with everything they want to do. They want to help her. They know that she's potentially in a lot of pain, given some of the monologues that the shadow Futaba tells them about how she's someone who suffered a lot, who seems to have no worth for herself as a person, who basically wants to trap herself in her own tomb the way that the Egyptian royalty did. When they die, they want to just lock themselves in. And she feels utter amounts of guilt over something horrible that happened in her life. So I think we can go ahead and spoil exactly what happened. Futaba had an argument with her mother, Wataba. And the very last time they met each other, they had a very strong argument with each other. And very shortly after this argument, Wataba walks in the middle of a street, and you know, imagine it in media, like it's the character that just like stretch their arms out and they just give themselves to the car, and the car kills them immediately. And so Futaba is stricken with horrible amounts of guilt of being responsible for the death of her mother, for causing her mother's suicide. And that's part of the things that the shadow of Futaba mentions to the Phantom Thieves, why she deserves to be like locked up with unable to talk to anyone, because she sees no value for herself as a person because she's responsible for the murder, for the death of her mother. So the Phantom Thieves have to work with Futaba to convince her that she is worthy and that she's not responsible. As it turns out, and unfortunately this goes into the bigger part of the story, but Futaba was doing research about the metaverse, so she actually had research about the metaverse and was learning more about it. And around that same time, some kind of secret organization caused her death. So it wasn't her just being so stressed out over her daughter that she decided to kill herself. It was a hit and run. Futaba is, she's about a teenager. She's been living with the memories of parts of the pyramid. Like, you can see the hieroglyphics. It's just depictions of the accident. They're plastered all over the place. It's an image that's been haunting her for her entire life. And it's something that she's tried so hard to be able to persevere through, but couldn't find the strength. And the reason that she wanted the Phantom Thieves to steal her heart was because potentially maybe that would be to finally give her that opening. Maybe that would finally give her the opportunity to turn her life around. And I found it incredibly powerful and utterly emotional. I saw some seriousness in the game earlier with the gym teacher. If there's nothing like this, this really hit home for me. I already deal so much with issues of self-worth in my daily life. To see a video game character deal with these issues in such a visceral way, it was so meaningful to me. So eventually the Phantom Thieves are able to they reach a breakthrough with Futaba. Opens the door. They're able to hand her their calling card. And right before they're about to be able to steal Futaba's treasure, and it turns out that it's the boss, or at least, well, there's Shadow Futaba, but sometimes there's also a boss. And sometimes the shadow manifests into the boss because it's their ultimate form or their final form. In this case, it's her mother is the final boss of the palace. She's a sphinx, a winged beast, and saying horrific things to her daughter. Saying, like, you're responsible for my death. You're useless. You're pathetic. You deserve to die. Fuck. Oh, God. So hard to even reiterate this information. So Futaba finally finds the strength within herself to say, fuck off. You're not my mother. You are a manifestation of my own imagination. You are not real. My mother was a caring, kind, wonderful individual. You are a lie. And the fantasies are able to power through, and they're able to destroy this creature. And Futaba is even able to find her own persona. And one of the great things about it is that it fits in with her personality. She wouldn't just be someone who's in combat. She's the navigator. Her name is Navi. She's the one who gives instructions to the Phantom Thieves, or gives information to the Phantom Thieves. She's even useful in combat after the fact. And she's basically like a UFO, like floating above, and is able to help the Phantom Thieves destroy her twisted manifestation of her mother. And that was so amazing. It was a difficult battle, and I did die once. I think it was one of my first deaths in the game. But it felt amazing. It's put this horrible feeling of inadequacy to rest for good. And so Futaba joins the Phantom Thieves, is able to help them with Medjet, and is able to finally reconcile with her mother's death, able to reconcile with her caretaker, who she has a good relationship with, but it hasn't really been very... I think in the past year, I think she's basically like a hikikomori otaku, where she didn't leave her room for days or a very long time. Like, she had a lot of snacks in her room, but she just never left. And she's finally able to open up to everyone. Even over the course of the game, you get to learn more about her, and she's a lot more open. And she wants to find out who is responsible for her mother's death. And that's one of the things I just didn't expect from this game. I just thought it would just be a really fun game with a lot of style and personality, but it's also incredibly well written. Some fantastic performances from the English dub, the English actors who play the characters. I just wasn't ready for just how much this was going to affect me personally. And for that reason. And it was kind of funny. I actually thought you can actually date some of the women in the game. I think I'm actually going to be dating Makoto. I think she lines up more with me personally. But I actually got a Nendo of Futaba for my brother because there's a lot of parallels with his personality and her personality. And so it was kind of like helping my own brother out in ways that I have been able to in real life, but not to that extent. Or not, obviously, I didn't help him defeat a giant beast, but then, you know, it's too dark. But in some ways, because I sort of did. Alright, we gotta wrap it up. I don't know how long I've been talking. But some final thoughts. This game is very, very, very long. If you want to play this game, I highly would recommend it. I think it is, out of doubt, even without having finished the game, one of my favorite games of all time. As I said it in the beginning, but it is very, very long, and it is definitely a commitment. It's kind of funny. Cat Bailey and Cat Bailey, who has the podcast Axe of the Blood God, which is actually about RPGs. She's someone who is someone who talks about RPGs every single week, revels in RPGs, still has not finished Persona 5. It's that type of game. And Dragon Quest XI. She's making her way through Dragon Quest XI. I am also making my way through Dragon Quest XI. I'm only 30 hours into that game. Jesus Christ. I've got a lot of work. That's going to be a wrench, I bet. Yeah, I love Dragon Quest XI. That might be an even more difficult wrench, I bet, than this one. It's probably going to be similar. It's like, I didn't beat the entire game, but I want to talk about it. And here's me talking about it. I will definitely be putting time to play that game. But yeah, even it's a game that's, it's hard for a lot of people. Like, they just, to find the commitment, to find the time to do it. Like, you literally have to just block out, like, hours of your time to play this game. And if you're not ready for that type of commitment, if it seems too long, totally understand. If you just want to get to the gameplay bits and skip all the story, I think you're missing out a lot of important parts of it. But, I mean, ultimately, the game is as playable as you want it to be. The game gives you so many options to what you want to do, what you can do. It's like, the game is what you make of it. You don't have to make the relationships with all the characters if you don't want to. I mean, you do get advantages and incentives for doing so, but you don't have to. It's up to you. But yeah, no, I fucking love this game. I've loved getting to talk about it for, I don't know if it's been an hour, but almost an hour now. And I would highly recommend it for anyone who's a fan of RPGs, a fan of just style and grace. That's lame. But who's a fan of, like, solid, very, just wonderful. I'm at the point where I just have hyperlatives. Nothing but hyperlatives. One of the best games I've ever fucking made. Play it if you can. It is a big commitment. But if you can, it's going to be the best experiences you'll ever play. But big warning, if some of the things that we've talked about in this episode, if you did listen to this episode, in case that the subject matter was too difficult, I understand. But if you did listen to this episode and you listened to some of the plot lines that we talked about, if that seems too intense, and then maybe I would recommend playing something else. Dragon Quest XI, there is a serious story in that one, but it doesn't seem to be as serious in this regard. Reading as well, you have to be, I think this is an M-rated game, so if you are of the age, you can, I honestly don't care about that really, but that is something to be weary of. And if that's something you are ready to play, if you're mentally ready for it, and I would definitely absolutely give it a try. So yeah, so my final thoughts, we'll see if we'll be coming back to Persona 5. If after I finish the game and there's been enough story bits where it's worth to revisit it, we might do another ranchette bit about the rest of the game. We will definitely be doing a ranchette bit about Persona 5 Scramble, the Phantom Strikers, because surprisingly, the Japanese demo for that game, just the demo alone, in terms of story, was already an hour long, a pretty lengthy, meaty demo. Unfortunately, I had to skip most of it because it's only in Japanese right now. You can only get the Japanese demo for PS4 or for Switch. But I feel like that stuff is going to be a really fun. I hope it's going to be a really fun game, and I'll definitely be arranging a bit in the future. But again, thank you everyone for donating. And we'll see you next time for the next Ranchette bit. All right. Take care, everybody.